and welcome to this month's episode of Money Mountaineering with Peter Neuwirth. We are talking to Ken Steiner about how much can I afford to spend in retirement. Before I kick it over to Pete, I want to let you know that Ken is a fellow of the Society of Actuaries. He's currently retired and continues to advocate for the use of basic actuarial and financial economic principles to help mostly retired or near retired people make better financial decisions. He has been determining reasonable spending budgets discussed on his website for more than a decade. For those, go to howmuchcanIaffordtospendinretirement.blogspot.com. And we promise we will put that all over the place so you can just like click on the link. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Pete. Take it away.
Well, thanks a lot, Hope. And Ken, I'm so happy you agreed to come in and talk to me about a subject that you've been on top of for far longer than I have, and in some ways have been an inspiration to me as I've looked at retirement income strategies and trying to help people navigate and spend appropriately and live on their assets for the rest of their life. And just by way of background, because you don't publicize your bio so broadly, Ken, I know you were really the chief research actuary at one of the firms I worked for. And we worked together on and off since 1996 until you retired, I guess in, what was it, 2010, something like that?
Yeah, beginning of 2010, right?
Right. And since then, you have continued to be an actuary, which I think is, I always say, you know, once an actuary, always an actuary. And what was pretty remarkable to me is that in 2015, you jumped on the decumulation problem way before most of us recognized that it was a gnarly problem indeed. This idea of how can, in a defined contribution world, how can I live on the assets I've accumulated for the rest of my life? I guess you sort of broke the news to the world that maybe you ought to be looking at that as an actuary looks at it back in 2015. So can you talk a little bit about that article that you produced in, you wrote in 2015 and what your whole perspective was?
Well, when I retired in 2010, I like many actuaries, pension actuaries like you and I are, I read a lot about the 4% rule and a lot of strategies that were being put out there. And it seems to me, as a pension actuary, very similar to what I did as a pension actuary and something that was kind of, the decumulation problem was an actuarial problem that kind of screamed out for an actuarial solution. And so when I retired, I started this blog, and a lot of my research, it was fun. You know, I'm retired. I'm mostly retired. I'm not really a practicing actuary, and I don't do this blog for any monetary profit. I do it like many retirees do things, to keep themselves busy. So I play bridge and I play tennis and I try to keep my physical in shape. But, you know, every now and then I get excited about what I read in the financial media. So I started doing this blog and I discovered Advisor Perspectives. And I said, you know, really, this is something the actuarial process and basic actuarial principles can be used in financing personal retirement plans. And in that article in 2015, I encouraged advisors to think like an actuary and employ basic actuarial principles.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, one of the lines that stuck with me in that article was think like an actuary and become a better advisor. And so much, I agree with you that so much of the world was thinking about retirement income in the context of investment advisors. You know, Advisor Perspectives was largely investment advisors.
It still is.
Right. It still is. It's true. Although there's now a few actuaries like us that haunt, and occasionally Bob Upshur allows us to, you know, put our perspectives on there.
It does. Which
I appreciate. But it was the 4% rule that came from the investment world, and it was all about investment technology and looking at assets. And actually, when you get to retirement, it's really more about the liabilities, isn't it?
But yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It was a very famous actuary named Pete Neuwirth who said that this is all about comparing assets and liabilities and cash flow in an uncertain economic environment. And so I agree. That's what we actuaries do. We compare assets and liabilities. And so I've got over 400 posts, but it basically comes down to I encourage people to compare on an annual basis, because I think the process is very important. This annual valuation process that we used as pension actuaries, that Social Security actuaries use almost identically with what I suggest for personal retirement planning, to compare assets and liabilities and see where they're going.
Right. I mean, I recall when we were actuaries valuing pension plans, we used to tell our clients, the only thing I know about this year's valuation is that it's going to be wrong. You know, we can project the liabilities, we can project the assets, if you will, but we know we're going to be wrong. So once you do that valuation, I know what happens we both know what happens in the pension world, but as an individual, when you project your assets and liabilities and see if they match, and what happens when they're not right?
You make adjustments. And so, you know, part of the what I advocate in my website is to plan on making future changes. And so you're not going to get it right. Your assumptions are going to be wrong. And you hope that they're not horribly wrong. And then every year you do a reevaluation and you measure what your new assets are against your new liabilities. And you do like what they're talking about for Social Security. They compare annually assets and liabilities. And Social Security is, if you look at it in one way, it's about 80% funded. The funded status of Social Security assets versus its liabilities based on a projection of assumptions is about 80%. And Congress has, since 1983, not made any adjustments. So now they have to make a big adjustment. So what I advocate for personal financial planning is to make smaller adjustments more frequently.
Well, and you know, Social Security, you know, they theoretically could increase the taxes, but they can't really reduce the benefits. But as an individual, I guess you can adjust your spending. So that's one of the levers you have. So maybe you can you talk a little bit about the levers that an individual might have to make adjustments?
If your assets aren't matching up with your liabilities, you need to either increase your assets through working more or taking on a roommate or restructuring your investments and deferring Social Security, which may strengthen your assets, the commencement of Social Security, or you can decrease your spending.
So actually, as an individual, you've got lots and lots of levers and many levers that people don't often think about. I mean, I can remember the last time you and I worked together, we were reviewing Steve Vernon's white paper on how to spend safely in retirement. And I recall at that point, you had mentioned that one of the biggest assets that most retirees have, or maybe it's the third or fourth largest, is the value of their future earnings in part time. So
there's that. You can also hope to win the lottery or get a big inheritance. And so there are ways, if you want to fool the system, you can assume that you're going to win the lottery, or you can assume that you get a big inheritance. And just like any other model, if garbage in, garbage out. So if you make bad assumptions, you can game the system.
Well, I mean, that really is one of the key roles that we play as an actuary, is choosing assumptions. And so, you don't have to sell me. And I've sold as many people as I can find on the notion that the actuarial perspective is the right way to look at retirement income strategies.
Sorry, Pete, you and I are of like minds on that. But, you know, just like with many other things in this world, not everybody thinks the same way we do.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. But what I was going to get to is, how does an individual who's not an actuary make those kind of assumptions?
Well, that's a good question. It's not all science. There's a lot of art involved. So it's a mix of art and science. I try to help people with my actuarial financial planner model by giving them default options that they can change if they want. And the default assumptions relate to discount rates for non-risky investments, discount rates for risky investments, which many people have expectations that risky investments will yield higher returns, lifetime planning periods and inflation, as well as if you're married, what percentage of spending will drop to on the death of first death within the family.
In terms of how long you're going to live, how should someone think about that?
Well, the common strategy or what academics recommend is to plan long. And so the default option in the actuarial financial planner that I advocate simplistically is about life expectancy for a healthy individual plus 5 or 6 years. Technically, I use the actuarial longevity illustrator and use the 25% probability for someone who's a non-smoker in excellent health. And it works out to be about 5 or 6 years more than the life expectancy of a non-smoker in excellent health.
Well, I mean, you've also implicitly kind of underlined another principle of actuarial work and the actuarial perspective, which is to be conservative. I mean, to make sure, because you don't want unpleasant surprises. I hear you on that. Now, I imagine a lot of people are probably thinking, well, this is all well and good, but it doesn't sound so practical. And what kind of tools do I have? So can you talk a little bit about the tools you have on your website and how people can use them and where they are and how they can get
them? The primary tool for someone who's retired or near retirement is the actuarial financial planner. And we have a separate one for single individuals and one for married couples. It's really, it's not that complicated or scary. It does involve actuarial present values, but the present values are calculated in the program and are not, you're generally not asked to calculate your own present values because that's, I understand that's a problem for many people. So that's the primary tool. It requires you to input your demographics, your asset information, and your desired spending levels in terms of essential spending, recurring spending, non-recurring spending, and discretionary spending. Because I think it's important to make a distinction between discretionary spending and essential spending in your planning. And then the output of the program is simply an actuarial balance sheet that shows your assets separated into those categories and your liabilities, at which point you can compare how your floor portfolio or your portfolio of non-risky assets compares with your essential expenses and how your upside portfolio or the portfolio of risky assets funds your discretionary expenses.
So it almost sounds like you're using what I've heard of referred to as the bucket approach. And is that, I mean, is there a difference between what you're suggesting and what many advisors are out there talking about, the two or three bucket approach?
Well, there's all kinds of different bucket approaches. You know, bucket approaches can involve funding for the next 5 years or periods after 5 years. So It is essentially a bucket approach or a two bucket approach. One of the buckets being the floor portfolio to fund your essential expenses, and the upside portfolio to fund your discretionary expenses.
Are you suggesting that people invest their assets in different ways, or is that?
Yes, I think one of the biggest issues in retirement planning is how much of my assets should be in non-risky assets and how much of my assets should be in risky assets. And I should be comfortable with that. So the website strongly encourages you to do this matching of non-risky investments and essential expense spending.
Okay, so fundamentally, if I'm thinking about this as a kind of a cash flow matching problem, I got to make sure that I've got assets whose present value, whose future cash flow will match what I need, you know, is not very risky at all, and will match what I know I'm going to have to spend. And then what I would like to spend, I can put into a riskier portfolio.
Exactly.
Okay.
I couldn't have expressed it better. And in fact, I didn't.
Well, now, you know, your 2015 article did have some impact, and people started changing their ways and so forth. But then in 2019, you wrote another article for Advisor Perspectives. And there, I think you went through some more step-by-step approaches.
My thinking has evolved. I learn. I'm not too old to learn. So I learn from reading your articles and other people's articles. And my ideas have been morphing as well as my tools.
But again, you had these seven steps, and I kind of wrote them down there. I mean, would you direct people back to that article, or do you have those seven steps somewhere on your?
Yeah, the seven steps are on the website. Yeah, I have been trying to make this more accessible to individuals. I don't go out of my way. I'm a retiree, so I play table tennis and tennis and play bridge I'm not in this for a business, but I do spend time, and I try to make it more accessible. What they really want, and what my consultants wanted when I was resource actuary, was they wanted a Vulcan mind meld that they didn't have to really read or go through a lot of this actuarial geekiness to get the answer. So I keep working at it, but yeah, the seven steps are, I think, an effort to try to illustrate that it's not that difficult to go through this process.
If the people that are out there are working with a financial planner, I mean, what would you recommend that they ask their financial planner to help them fill in your, you know, download your tool and fill it in? Or is it, I mean, do you?
What I would really recommend is that people play with the tool and get comfortable with the tool on their own and use it as a check against what they're getting from their financial advisor. And you know, if it comes out significantly different, which I hope it wouldn't, then, you know, bring it up with the financial advisor and have the financial advisor convince them that this Ken Steiner is an idiot.
Now, I hesitate to ask this, but you're just giving away this for free for anybody that wants it. Are you also available if people have questions?
Oh, sure. Yeah. All they have to do is write the website and I will respond to them. There are people who say that if you get it for free, it can't be worth much. So,
well, I don't know. I think it depends on why it's free. And I think it's free because this is a passion of yours and
right.
You know what you're talking about, and you want to enlighten people. And I think that's wonderful. You know,
My intent is to try to help people make better financial decisions. Yes.
Right. I guess I just can't let you go without asking about one of my, and I, you know, we had this little interaction before the thing, because, you know, present value is the, probably the one thing that separates actuaries from, I mean, people talk about discounted value and so forth, but present value has a very specific and special meaning to actuaries. And we live in present value. And one of the keys to that present value calculation is what kind of discount rate you use to value, to bring back what happens in the future to the value today. And everybody has a different way of valuing the future and the present. Some people live for today. Some people live for tomorrow. Some people don't know, don't even think about it. So where are you on the whole, how do you choose a discount rate?
In terms of funding the household essential expenses, I'm fairly committed to some kind of a discount rate that is comparable to what you'd have to pay to defease that, that liability. So what you'd have to pay an insurance company to fund your essential expense liabilities. With respect to the discount rate used for funding your discretionary expenses, I'm totally with you. That's a personal issue. And I have a default option, and you know, it's based on expectations, but users of the tool should feel very free to change their discount rate based on what they think is the right expectation for returns on risky assets. And but then, Pete, they need to be prepared to cut back that discretionary spending if those assumptions don't play out.
Right. Well, okay. I mean, I think we're just about out of time, and I wanted to, you know, again, really, really thank you for what you're doing. And again, it's how much can I afford to spend in retirement.blogspot.com.
Right.
And it's totally free, and you're available to answer questions. And I mean, I think, you know, this is just a terrific resource, and it's not meant to replace your financial planner or replace the experts who are advising you on, you know, whether to buy Chevron stock or...
Don't make investment recommendations. I talk in general terms about how much you want might want to be invested in non-risky versus risky assets. But I'm not a financial planner. I'm an actuary. And I'm just advocating these actuarial principles to tackle this decumulation problem.
Well, you and me both. And again, Ken, thanks so much for being my guest. And I hope we meet again. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. That was really interesting. How much can I afford to spend in retirement? Who knew it was so complicated? And yet we sort of all know it's so complicated. So Ken, we're going to see if we can't put those 7 tips on Pete's website. We'll have a conversation after we finish tonight. So thanks. Thank you all to our readers, our viewers, and our listeners. This is Money Mountaineering with Peter Neuwirth. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs, producer of the show on the Incandescent Radio Network and Incandescent TV. And we will see you again next month. Take care.